that when you go to an audition, the audition doesn't start when you open your mouth. The audition starts when you enter the room.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Holly Mignozzi. There's three facts that I think you should know about Holly. As a former model and acting coach, as well as a fitness coach, she has helped over 250,000 people embody their message with confidence and charisma on command. Two, as a TEDx speaking coach, Holly helps excite executives and mission-driven experts captivate audiences with the power of storytelling and hypnotic body language. And three, other than her kids, one of her most proud moments was when she finally overcame her fear of Jaws. You remember the movie? Doo-dun, 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 doo-dun. And she was overcame her fear and she was able to go into the ocean even deeper than her knees without crying. Holly Mignozzi, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Hello, George. Thank you so much for inviting me to Your Intended Message. I'm excited to be here.
Holly, excited to be talking with you because I know you specialize in helping people deliver more powerful stories and coordinating it with more powerful body language. And as a fitness instructor and as a former fitness instructor and model, I expect that you probably have a special appreciation of how we move and stand and control our body to support the message. And yet so many people who haven't had that kind of training, they ignore what's going on with their body. Why is it important that our body is in sync with our story?
Why is it important that our body is in sync with our story and our communication? Whatever it is that we are speaking about or talking about, if it's not in sync, as you said, George, then it's what we call mismatching. It's out of alignment. If our body is communicating one thing and our tonality or our words are saying something completely different, then the audience feels like they don't understand you, they're confused, or maybe they don't even trust you. For example, if I said, "I really love you," you know, you're shaking your head and you're like, "I just really love you." And you got the squished up face. It just doesn't quite come across the same as "I love you." Open arms and the lighting up the face and the deep breath. And so it's important for us to be aware of the things that our body might be giving away and we don't even realize it.
When you work with executives and help them deliver their presentations, what's the first obstacle you need to get them by to understand, to fully appreciate the role of body in their message?
The first thing, number one, is your body is communicating 100% of the time. Your mouth isn't. Sometimes your face may not be, but your body, whether it's your posture, whether it's how you're breathing, very subtle things, and maybe even what we call micro expressions in the face, a quick smile or a little tiny wink, or maybe a little scouring of the eyebrows. All of those things are communicating something to your audience. And when I work with high-level executives, whether we're
helping them with their TED talk, or if I'm working with entrepreneurs and experts online, one of the things that makes me different from other communication, storytelling, and body language experts is I really look for those mismatching moments, so that when you are getting your call to action across, whether you want to sell your products or services, or maybe it's a message like, you know, go home and hug your family, tell them you love them, whatever it is, you want to communicate it with a level of authenticity, certainty, power, influence, and persuasion. And all of those things can be found right here in your body.
And the body language, is it tend to be, the messages that our body sends, is it does it happen at a subconscious level? Does it tend to happen without us thinking about it until we get in control of it?
Yes. So both are true. It can happen unconsciously as well as conscious. And those that practice the art of how they move their body, for example, athletes and dancers, are keenly aware of every movement their body makes, from the fingertip to the eyebrow to the toe, because it all matters. But those of us that maybe sit at a desk, those of us that maybe are working in an environment where we're by ourselves, we're just not trained on a daily basis to pay attention to these things. So those subtleties are really important. And I would love to share some things that we can start to watch for so that we can become more in tune with our own body language. You know, I love to tell this really kind of quick story, if I may. A friend of mine went to a party in Hollywood. And she said she was at a cocktail party, a small party, maybe, you know, 100 people, and people were chatting, and all of a sudden the room went dead silent. And everyone looked at the door, and Julia Roberts walked in. She graciously walked in, went over and started chatting with someone, and then everyone else turned back around and finished their conversation. And I said to my friend, that was not a mistake. Julia Roberts is an actress, and I guarantee she has practiced walking into a room thousands of times. How do I know? Because I spent decades in the modeling and acting industry. And with models, we would practice working on the runway. We would watch things like your shoulders, your arm swing, because your left arm, if you're right hand dominant, your left hand will usually swing more than your right. Or if you're left-handed, your right hand will swing more than your other. So we would pay attention to these very subtle things. Even the actors who were studying TV commercials and wanting to get into film, in a two-hour class, we would bring all the models and actors together and have them work the runway, not because they were all going to be in big shows, but because it was so important to understand that when you go to an audition, the audition doesn't start when you open your mouth. The audition starts when you enter the room.
And that's probably an important lesson for any business leader to be aware of, because your presentation doesn't necessarily start when you've been introduced and you stand up to speak. It starts when you walk in the room.
That's right. That's right. We are judging each other and making these snap judgments unconsciously in milliseconds. And it's just part of our hardwire. As we were developing in the caveman days, I guess you could say, we would be out foraging for berries or fruits or whatever. And if we saw another human, the first thing we would want to find out is, are they friend or foe? Is this someone that has a weapon in their hand? Or is this someone that is here to be my friend? And so we keenly make these quickly snap judgments. We look at things like hands. Hands are your trust triggers. So back in the old days, if we had a weapon, a stick, a rock, then we would look in the hands for weapons. So very quickly, when you say hello to someone, if you can just offer a wave or a palm, even on Zoom, if you're meeting with someone, I recommend to just do a quick wave with the hands, because that lets people know unconsciously, I'm a friend. And the opposite is true. If you walk into a room and you have your hands behind your back, and you leave them there, eventually people are going to get a little bit uncomfortable and start to wonder, what's back there? Yeah. So the more we can just show our hands instantly, we develop a good sense of trust. The other thing that I would love to share is I would love to share the four E's of engagement and influence, if I can, as it relates to body language. Would that be okay?
You teased us with that. Of course we want to hear, Holly. Go ahead.
All right. So these are things that we can start using today. And you don't have to wait until you're speaking on a big stage or virtually speaking. You don't even have to wait till you go to a meeting. You can do this with your family and your loved ones or your roommates. So the first E is, if you're ready for this, expanded posture. Leaders always take up more space vertically and horizontally. So what does that mean for us right now? It means that we roll the shoulders back. We pull the chin back, maybe a half an inch. We put our hips into neutral. And don't be afraid to use your hands when you speak. And when you stand, instead of maybe standing with your legs close together or standing with one, like leaning to one side with one foot out, maybe you just make like an A-frame with your legs and you just take up a little bit more space. I like to people watch. And when I go to seminars and events, I love to watch how people take up more space. So not only can you take up more space with your body, but have you ever been to an event and you see someone come in and they start putting their jacket on a chair and then their book on a different chair and then their something else on another chair? It's like they're claiming space, perhaps for their friends or something like that. So taking up space, expanding that space is number one, both vertically and horizontally. Number two is to have engaging eye contact. It's so easy when our loved one comes home to just say hi and kind of look away. But eye contact, they found deep eye gazing builds trust. And I like to play a little game whenever I go to the grocery store, and I'd love to share this little game with you. There's something called the unconscious hello. And the unconscious hello is when you make eye contact with someone and it's a quick eyebrow flash. The eyebrows lift. Yes, the eyebrows lift like that very quickly. And the reason why they raise is because when we see someone or something that we like or we find pleasurable, we want to open up our eyes to take more of that in. Conversely, if we see someone or something that we're skeptical or unsure of, we kind of pull back a little bit, eyebrows squint, eyes kind of go a little smaller. So the unconscious hello, that quick eyebrow flash, is something that I like to play with when I go into a grocery store. I like to count how many unconscious hellos can I get? And it just means that I'm on that day. People had, they looked at me, they had a quickest unconscious evaluation, and they decided I was a friend. Yeah, it's pretty fun to see what you can do when you go to different places. Yeah. The third of the engagement and influence is your emotional state control. So in order to make the most of that unconscious hello, you have to do what I call, you have to turn yourself on. You have to say, okay, I'm turning myself on. And that means you're energized, your posture is back, and you're open, and you're walking with a purpose. This is something that we also see leaders do, in contrast with people who are not leaders. We walk with a purpose. It means that each step is taking you in a very specific direction. And having that state control where you turn yourself on with various emotions. It could be the emotion of joy, the emotion of gratitude, the emotion of, you know, it's just a beautiful day today. And I'm just gonna take that in and really experience the sun, or maybe it's even raining if you love rain. So the third thing is really mastering emotional state control, choosing the emotion that you want to feel and radiate. And then the last one, the fourth one, is the echo technique. So this has less to do with body language and more about perception and communication, which I know your intended message is all about, George. So the echo technique, I didn't create it. I learned it from one of my mentors, David Snyder, who is a world-renowned hypnotist. And what he found is that words are extremely important to the individual. In fact, the exact words that they use are more important than paraphrasing. So for example, if you're having a talk with someone and you're chatting, maybe in a business setting, networking, or maybe a get to know you conversation, if you can echo back to them the exact words that they used, again, not paraphrasing, they will feel heard. They will feel that they are listened to, and you're giving them basically their values. If they say something like, let's say, for example, I'm so excited this weekend because I was able to go to the racetrack with my kids. You can just simply replay that. Oh, that's so awesome. You're able to go to the racetrack with your kids. Tell me about that. And for them, since that's their value, they're hearing that very important high value come back to them, and it builds trust, it builds rapport, and it actually puts them in a deep state of pleasure. All the pleasure chemicals start firing in the brain, and they associate it with you.
And that's curious, because a person might be tempted to translate what they heard. They might say, oh, you went out for some excitement on the weekend, as opposed to went to the racetrack with your kids.
Exactly. You got it. Yeah, that's actually a mistake, is to paraphrase it. But if you replay it exactly back, and then you have the sensory acuity to watch their facial expressions, watch their body language relax, watch them lean into you as they start to share a little bit more about their life, you'll notice that it's a powerful rapport builder.
And that sounds like a excellent technique to you for a seller to use in a sales conversation when talking with a prospect or a client.
100% correct. Correct. And in fact, if that's the only thing you do is the echo technique, your potential client, potential customer will feel a connection, and they will feel as though they trust you. You're absolutely right.
Holly, let's explore the storytelling a little bit more. When did you become aware of the power of stories?
Thank you for asking me that. You know, it really happened in my early 20s. I couldn't stop using cocaine, because if I did, I would lose my job. And I was modeling and acting by day. And at night, I was teaching at the local school for models and actors. And I loved it. And it was my dream job, until one day my boss, John, called all of us runway instructors and acting coaches into a room, announced that he was taking the company global and that we had to look like celebrity models. And he pulled out a measuring tape, and he announced that he wanted to measure each of us. For the women, he wanted to measure our bust, our waist, and our hips to make sure that they were perfect. And, you know, in today's standards, we're horrified to hear something like that, because he was doing it publicly in front of our peers and coworkers. But back in the 90s, you know, we just didn't have those guidelines and that awareness back then. So he measured each one of us. And by the time he got to me, he said, you know, my bust and waist were fine, but my hips were 4 inches too big. And he announced, if anyone has this problem, fix it or you're fired. And in that moment, I felt like I was humiliated, honestly. George, I felt like the bad apple of the bunch. Everyone else was perfect but me. And I made a decision that I have to change this in my life. But I was a size 4. I was already very healthy and very thin. And I tried every pill, powder, and shake guaranteed to help you lose weight or your money back, but nothing worked until I started using drugs. And that's when my 10-year relationship on and off with drugs happened, in order to just basically manage my weight. And then in my early 30s, I met someone, got married, got pregnant, and I was able to quit all drugs while I was pregnant, because it's okay to gain weight while you're pregnant. You're supposed to, right? But within a few years, the pressure to be thin came back on, and there were some problems in the marriage, and things got really dangerous. I walked in one day to my bedroom, and I found my 3-year-old daughter sitting on the floor with her beautiful blue eyes and blonde hair, and she was holding my drugs in her hands. And I was horrified and shocked. I was afraid she had ingested something. So I ran to her, picked her up, checked her mouth. She didn't ingest anything. I got there just in time. And in that moment, I realized I need to change my life. I couldn't quit drugs for me, but I could quit for her. And I had no idea how I was going to do it, but I was determined. And in fact, I knew I needed to quit three things. I needed to quit drugs. I needed to quit my marriage because it was dysfunctional. And I needed to quit the only job that I ever loved. I had no idea how I was going to do it. And I quit cold turkey. And side note, if you or someone you know is going through this, I don't recommend that you quit cold turkey. I do recommend that you find professional help. And I definitely qualified for Narcotics Anonymous or something, but I didn't even know about that. I just knew I was unhealthy. The cravings were horrible and I needed to change my life. So I hired Tom the Trainer. Tom the Trainer was a 6'2", Italian, dark hair, dark eyed, amazing trainer, and his muscles had muscles. And we started training together. I was highly motivated to make every single workout. I didn't miss one. And he finally just really changed my life. He gave me compliments for not being strong. I'm sorry, for not being skinny, but for being strong. And for not skipping meals, but for eating the right meals. Within 4 months of meeting each other, we opened up a fitness business together called Beyond Fitness Personal Training in Northern San Diego. And it was an instant success, George. Finally, I could be me. I didn't have to be skinnier or bigger or whatever. I could be exactly who I was, be healthy, and help people. So I was training the women. We had doctors, nurses, we had ministers, we had teachers, we had just average moms and dads in our local community. And then Tom was training the men. And I felt so good about myself until I realized I had a new problem. My new problem was that I was hiding my story, because here I am supposed to be a role model of health and fitness. And what if my clients found out that I was using drugs just a few months earlier? Would I lose credibility? And I really felt like I would, but a little bit of my story seeped out with one of my clients. I told her about it. And she went and told all of her friends, her family, her church. And you know, the truth is, facts tell, but stories sell. It's hard to replay facts, but we're hardwired to share stories. And so she was sharing my story with her friends and brought them to our business. George, our business doubled. The exact story I was afraid to share, the thing that I thought would make me lose credibility, actually boosted our business, because there's two messages that happen when you tell a story. Number one, there's the message you intend. Number two, there's the message that they receive, that because of their life experience, you have no idea that they're receiving this message. And my client said to me something powerful. She said, "I get it. You weren't addicted to food, but you were addicted to drugs. An addiction's addiction, which is why you have so much compassion for people like me." And that's when I was like, wow, you know, when you share your story, like, I get it. People can make these connections that I would have never have guessed or never even thought of. And then I felt a stirring in my heart, a calling, if you will, to get back on stage, but not as a model, not as an actress, as me. Me, someone who wanted to help others to really embody and feel good in their body and embody their message. So I started studying storytelling with the best in the business, Bo Eason, Tony Robbins, Roger Love, and the list goes on. And then I realized, okay, everything I've been through with helping models on the runway, actors ace their auditions, fitness, it's all coming together to this moment where I'm helping experts really share a powerful message on stage. And that's when I learned the power of storytelling. And I continue to see it happen for my clients over and over and over. They'll call me and say, "I can't believe it. I just did a talk and a story and I won an award." And another client will call me and say, "I can't believe it. I got my first high paying ticket client because she said she heard my story on a podcast." And I'm like, yep, that's what happens, because what we're missing in our society is connection. And what we need for connection is vulnerability.
Powerful story, Holly. And I can appreciate that you might have kept that story inside because it's embarrassing, it's painful. Yeah. And that's interesting. There's many of us who have stories about painful moments, embarrassing moments, but when you tell that story, people see a part of you that they never seen before.
True.
And I might imagine they appreciate you for that, because I'm guessing that when you are able to reveal your flaws, perhaps they become more comfortable with their own.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. As a leader in modern day times, it's actually ideal now to admit your flaws, admit this didn't work out, it didn't go as I planned, and I'm owning that and I'm going to fix it. And we do feel more comfortable with someone who can admit their own flaws, because we also maybe unconsciously believe that they're going to be more accepting of our flaws as well. Yeah, that's true. And there is this balance with storytelling. You want to make sure that when you're revealing a flaw, that you also balance it with credibility. Like, we can't stand on stage and reveal what we haven't healed. That's a huge mistake, right? I'll say that again. Don't reveal what you haven't healed. But there is a beautiful thing that happens, that through sharing what you've been through, there is a healing process that occurs. And when I work with speakers, we practice sharing that story. And we decide, is this the right story to share with your audience? Is this the same struggle that your audience is going through? And we can find a place where we can connect. For example, my story might initially sound like it's about drugs. Well, it's part of it, but it's about a lot more than that. It's also about dealing with perfectionism. It's also about feeling shame around your history and being embarrassed to tell someone, this is a choice I made, this is what I went through. And when I'm working with experts on stage, they feel that. They feel a challenge with sharing some of the things that we've been taught. Hey, don't share that skeleton. Keep that in the closet, right? So we do work with exactly a process. And there's a 5-step process that I take experts through when we craft their story. So they are sharing both the pit, the low point, and the pinnacle, the high point. You want to have both. And a simple little phrase that I like to share to remind people of is, people will care more about your credibility when they have compassion for your struggle. They'll care more about your success when they have compassion for your struggle.
The last thing that we want to hear is how easy it was for you. Because if you tell us the story about how easy it was, how you were just plain successful, you made all the right calls, made all the right steps, we probably hate you.
Yeah. I hate those people that just have every lucky door open, right? Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not relatable. You know, we're hardwired for challenge. We're hardwired to grow. And that's human nature. And the underdog story is the most powerful story in history. And each of us has our own story of being the underdog. And how did we get through it? How did we make it through the dark night of the soul? How did we pick ourselves back up and keep going? And there's what I like to call the 4 pillars of charisma. And resilience is number 3. Number 1 is curiosity. Number 2 is playfulness. Number 3 is resilience. And number 4 is victorious. So victorious means that you feel and believe that you have won the race even before the race starts. Those are the qualities that we admire in people. And I would even add a 5th, and the 5th is compassion. Because if you have all those, but you don't have compassion for another, then you might be a narcissist. Mm. But if we could just add compassion to that And that leads to connection. And that's really what we want to say with our story and with our body language is that I am here. I am open. I want to know you. I'm curious about you. I want to hear about what you're up to. And I want to echo it back to you so that you know that I've heard you, that I see you, and that you are worthy of my attention.
Holly, when you tell your story, how do you tell it without breaking down?
Mm-hmm. Truth be told, the first time I told this, I was in tears, 100% in tears. I was so in shame and so embarrassed, as you said as well, of the choice that I had made that I didn't want to tell anybody. And I was going to a speaking event that was about storytelling. And I knew they were going to have us come up on stage and tell a story. And it had to be a story of it that was challenging. And I knew this was my biggest story. And I had to practice it. And so I went to my car at night, all dark. And I recorded my story on my phone. And I sent it to my four best friends. And I couldn't make it through the whole story without crying and shaking. And that process was incredibly healing for me because what I got back from my four best friends was, I don't see failure. I see resilience. I don't see irresponsibility. I see that when you saw the impact on your daughter, you changed your life. I see tenacity. I see strength. I see a mother's love. I see that, you know, you got into something very young and were kind of brainwashed to believe something that wasn't true about you, that you weren't good enough unless you were a size 2 or 3. And so what I received was a whole opposite of what I was feeling. And it started to make me realize, wow, there's another side to this. And if I can get through this and share it, and I can share it with somebody else, and it can impact them in a positive way, it's worth me taking the risk of sharing it. And the way I like to think of it is when you tell your story the right way, your story is someone else's path out of pain. It becomes a roadmap. Hey, I did this. These are the steps that I took, and you can do it too. And that's why I'm here, because I created a step-by-step process to help you get through it. And that's what we want to use our story for. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. It was terrifying the first time that I told it. And most of my clients break down and cry the first 2 or 3 times that they're telling their story. But what's interesting, George, is when you're telling your story and you have the intended message of sharing your story with the intention of impact, and you've told that story 100 times, you have a new problem. There's no emotion. Now that's when the expert goes from, I'm learning to craft my story, I'm sharing my story. Uh-oh, now my story isn't having any impact because I'm over it. So how do you get back into the emotion? How do you go back to feeling those things so that your audience can feel it too? And those are some of the things that I teach experts how to do.
So I'm hearing that when telling a personal story, especially a painful story, it's wrong to go cold, to try to just tell it logically. You still need to immerse yourself in the story, at least somewhat.
Absolutely, 100%. 100%. Yeah, it's really interesting. There's something called mirror neurons. I don't know if you've ever heard of mirror neurons, but mirror neurons are a part of our brain that when we see someone doing something, our brain interprets it as if we're doing it. And it was really fascinating how scientists found this. There were some scientists that were working with monkeys, and they had electrodes connected to the monkeys' brains. And the scientist took a little break and he started peeling a banana, right? He's eating a banana and he's looking at the screen, and the screen is firing. And it's showing the brain reaction of the monkey, and the monkey is reacting as if the monkey's peeling the banana, right? So what does this have to do with storytelling? Well, when you're sharing your story and you're feeling the emotions, there is an invisible conveyance that those emotions come through you to your audience, and they get transported, not transformation, but transportation into your story as if they're you, which is one of the key elements of storytelling. Can you tell the story not as though you're watching it and removed, but tell the story as if you're in it? We call that being associated. You're associated, you're in your body, you're seeing it. So when I'm telling the story of walking into my bedroom and seeing my daughter, I'm having a flashback. I'm remembering opening that door, seeing her on the floor and being horrified. And I know I'm doing a good job of telling the story when I look at the audience and I see their mouth drop. When I can see that and like people like a gasp, then I know that we're connected. I know that they're in my story, transported, and they're seeing it through my eyes. You know, it's that old saying, you know, if you can walk a mile in someone else's shoes, then you'll understand them. So that transportation and having your own mirror neurons fire with emotion is key to storytelling.
Holly, you have a gift for our listeners and viewers. Tell us, please, what that is.
Yes, thank you, George. If you would like to add some sizzle, to add some excitement to your own storytelling, or perhaps story selling, or your communication on stage, I have the hottest 15 hand gestures. It's a checklist that you can get at hollymignosi.com/hot15. And that's HOT15. And you will get a list of those hottest 15 hand gestures and little images and pictures. So you can make sure to embody them congruently with your message next time you want to speak with some flair and some charisma.
And you can find the link in the description for the hot 15. And Holly, in wrapping up, if you could offer one, two, or three tips to business leaders to make their stories more effective, what would that be?
The first part is to write out the story. Don't keep it all in your head. Write it all out so that you can clearly see the steps and what you want your audience to feel. The second is reverse engineer. What is it that you want your audience to do if you want to take an action, to feel, if you want them to feel something? Because all buying decisions are emotional. We think they're logical, but they're actually emotional. So what's the emotion that you want your audience to feel? And can you show that in your story as you're sharing the story? And the third is act it out. Whatever story you're telling, pretend like you're young again. Playfulness, right? One of the four pillars of charisma. Imagine that you're in that story and actually act it out so that your audience is making a mind movie. You're not just doing news reporting where you're telling facts. You're actually showing your audience a mind movie, and they're creating the movie in their own mind. I think if you do those three things, you'll find that you will captivate your audience, you will hold their attention, you will build rapport, and you will be able to connect at a level where you'll feel comfortable asking for whatever that thing is that you want, whether it's a sale or a partnership, a sponsorship. Those things will happen naturally.
My guest today is Holly Mignosi, reminding you to tell your stories and that the underdog story is the most powerful story.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.